हरि चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानंद श्री अद्वैत गदाधर शिव सरि गौर भक्त वृंद हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे 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 राम 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 हरे हरे.
So continue with the ambassador. Such an ambassador is commended to a king, who is loyal, honest, skillful, possessing a good memory, who knows the proper place and time for action, who is handsome, fearless, and eloquent. Okay. So that was based on the previous point. Well versed in all the sciences, understands hints, expressions of the face and gesture, who is honest, skillful, and of a noble family. So therefore the character comes out. Then his skills here specifically. Okay. So, I mean, loyal naturally, because if he's not loyal to the king, how will he represent him? You're going
somewhere? Not that I'm going.
Oh, okay. I mean, so far he's brought a garland of going
somewhere. No, I'm listening.
Okay, very good. He first gave a garland and disappeared during the class. In the class, just walked out and didn't know what was happening. So the next day, he gave, then he disappeared after the class. Now they're giving and not disappearing. It seems to be progression.
Yeah.
Okay. Honest, because if he's not working, if he's working for himself, he won't be able to be an ambassador. Right? The ambassador actually has to be able to properly deal and represent the king. Skillful, because he has to know what he's doing. He has to actually have the ability to do it. As we'll notice in the when we're going to administration, one of the common points is if you don't have the ability, you're not given the position. There's no sentiment in this. Though, it's all based on character. Character and ability. So it's not, well, he has the character, but not the ability, or has the ability, not the character, you know, or he just has seniority, like that. You know, it's not, that's, these are not considerations when you're dealing with administration, not the practical. There may be some political little elements, you know, like your 53rd, you know, executive vice president, which means you don't have any authority at all. Okay, you know, like that. But we're not talking this stuff. Okay, possessing a good memory, because he has to remember things, because he's met people before, he's met things, he's heard policy. At the last meeting, they said something because they weren't sure and they were throwing something out, but then, you know, it was left, so now they're hoping you don't remember it, but you do, and now is the time to stay, because if you said it before, it might have been good for them, but now you bring it up, they'll be in a weaker position.
So ambassador refers to someone who resides in a foreign kingdom full-time?
Not necessarily, but he's the one who, on behalf of the king, goes and interfaces with other kings. You know, in other words, he represents the king, he interfaces with kings. Like that. So this isn't the guy who sits in some little room and gives you a visa. That's not the guy we're talking about here. You know? We're talking about the one who actually interfaces with the government. Right? Okay. Who knows the proper place and time for action? Because if you do the wrong thing at the wrong time or wrong place, it won't be effective. So therefore, that's, you know, further. Handsome. Because handsome generally means piety. Right? You only look good if there's some piety. Right? And as we saw before, royal family, honest, loyal. So that means there's actually piety and character. So they look proper and they have the character to go along with it. Because generally if someone looks very good, you tend to trust them more than someone who doesn't. Because someone who doesn't look good is generally represents a lack of piety. Right? Does that make sense? Like Putana, right? You know, through and through demon, right? But because she looked good, therefore everyone trusted her, right? So it's the natural thing that someone who is handsome, then you will trust, right? So now he is handsome and he has the character, right? And people know he has character. He said this and it happened. Otherwise, you get something done now, but remember, countries last for a while, or administration lasts for a while. So people remember that they made all these nice things, said all nice things, and then they didn't keep their word. Right? They didn't follow through. So, you know, one or two of those, no one will trust you. So it has to be, he's made the arrangements, whatever arrangement was made, that's what's done. Right? So therefore, handsome, then it'll be more easy for them to accept. Right? Does that make sense? Fearless and eloquent, right? Fearless because sometimes they may, you know, threaten, or he has to deal in some situation where his country is actually in a weak position, but he has to present as though they're strong, so he can't in any way become made afraid, you know, fearful by the other parties. And eloquent, he must be a very nice speaker. When you listen to him speak, everyone is pleased. Because if you speak harshly or something, people won't appreciate it. You speak nicely, even you're saying something that's very blunt, but if it's said very pleasantly, people will take it. Because you can say, you know, the fact is that, you know, our country's in this position, yours is that, so it's not good for, you know, you're not in the strong position. So you don't want to say, hey, we're strong and you're weak, so you should accept our proposal. Right? You know, that works, you know, you know, you got two gangsters meeting each other, okay, but you generally see how it works out, you know, you know, like that. So the point is, he's saying is that, you know, in the situation you're in and that, you would do well to accept this or like that, it would, you know, something like that. It's presented very pleasantly, and therefore the other side would be like, or you're just, you know, selling whatever it is that you're trying to put across. Because, you know, the government, each government is trying to protect its people, right? Create the best situation for the citizens. So what you're trying to do is, the normal situation is, there's only a difficulty if one party isn't doing that. Or in the name of protecting their people, they are creating a situation that's not favorable for the next kingdom, right? Because the normal thing is, if you want to expand, you take control of the next kingdom. You don't take away part of their kingdom. Does that make sense? Let us say, on your border there's a river, right? So then, both kingdoms are getting benefit from the water, but you would like to have more water. You know, so, but the point is you don't take their river, because then that means the citizens in the next kingdom won't be protected. So the point is if there's a need and your people can't be, then you take control of the next kingdom and run it so that both kingdoms are, everybody is peaceful. Because the point is, the king has to protect the people. That's the real thing. It's not just expanding economics at the expense of others. No, you have protection of people is just how it works. So it's not economic gain. It's administrative gain so that you can protect. Does that make sense? That's why you have bigger kings and they have smaller kings. The army depends on the official placed in charge of it. The due control of the subjects on the army. Right? The treasury and the government of the realm on the king. Peace and its opposite, war, on the ambassador. Right? So you're going to have peace or war because of the ambassador. So therefore you have to pick a good and ask. For the ambassador alone makes kings allies and separates allies. The ambassador transacts that business by which kings are disunited or not. Right? He brings kings together, right, by presenting a very good plan, or he is able to speak in such a way that he breaks them. Right? So that's the power of the ambassador. He has to be able to work on that level. So he unites kingdoms or he separates them. He causes peace, he causes war. Right? So it's not just he's been around a while, so therefore he's your choice. Right? With respect to the affairs, let the ambassador explore the expression of the countenance, the gestures and actions of the foreign king, through the gestures and actions of his confidential advisors, and discover his designs amongst his servants. Right? So that means he's watching the king himself, he's watching those who are advising the king, and he's also seeing what's going on in with his servants in the palace. Because he represents the other kingdom. So therefore he'll be put up properly, he'll be in the palace. And so he'll have his way to connect, and you know, these are things we don't get into here. That would be in the Arthashastra. Right? In other words, he has to know how to deal with the spies, this, that, all these different things. Because why would you go to this other kingdom if you don't already have your spies there? What can you do? Right? Having learnt exactly from his ambassador the designs of the foreign king, let the king take such measures that he does not bring evil on himself. Right? So, when he figures out, you know, how you say? Just thinking. When Yves Saint Laurent learns what designs that Louis Vuitton is doing, then he will do something to not bring evil upon himself. Right? Is that what it's saying here? So when the foreign king, when he's understood what's happening, he acts in such a way that no evil will come to here. It doesn't mean war. It doesn't mean this and that. It means what will be the best for your kingdom. As we saw before, there were six elements to look at. You know, you might march, you might unite, you might fight, you might retreat. Right? There's so many different things. So he will figure out what would be the best policy. Does this make sense? Okay. The fort, right? So in other words, this is giving everything just in the essence of all this. So this chapter is just giving the essence of how to establish the government, what's required to establish it. Right? Then after that, it'll explain how we'll apply it. So this is not... Yes?
I was curious, when Yudhishthira Maharaj did the Rajasuya sacrifice and sent the Pandavas in all four directions,
right,
did they take those kingdoms by force, or a lot of them resigned peacefully?
From what I know of, very rarely, some of them they had to fight, like that. But even if once they conquered, then it was unrivaled. You know, no one was complaining or anything. You know, so there wasn't a problem. But some of them had to fight, but a lot of them didn't. You know.
It was quite common for the king just to subjugate himself a little.
Yeah, yeah, because the point is, if the other king is superior, no one minds. See, there's not a problem in being junior to a superior king. It's equals that then there's a problem. You know, it's just like the king, he won't have a problem if he's on the battlefield and he's killed or captured by a superior king. You know, it's just like if you fight with Arjuna and you lost, there is no, it's not a, what would you say? You know, it's not a lowering of your status, right? Like that. You know, just because he's greater. So it's just that you got to the point you could fight with him, that's pretty good.
And are there any shastras that deal with the gestures and the subtle expressions on the faces?
Yeah, well, there's different ones, yeah.
That we can read.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, your astrological things will deal with it, your Rasha shastras deal with it, you know, Ayurveda will deal. It means there's a lot of different things. That's why it's one body of knowledge, it just has all these different aspects. So before, these are arts that would be learned. Right? So generally, the higher up one is in the social system, the more of these arts one would learn, like that. So your kings would know more, your emperors would know the most. So that just by Yudhishthir being the emperor, he's the most qualified in all these. So they can just tell by how someone acts and behaves. That's the more. So these are all these are the things that are, you know, important, but they're not used economically. They're only used so that one can deal properly. You know, so you don't take advantage of these things. Like that. Does that make sense? Okay, the fourth. Let him settle in a country which is open and has a dry climate, where grain is abundant, which is chiefly inhabited by Aryans, not subject to epidemic diseases or similar troubles, and pleasant, where the vassals are obedient and his own people easily find a livelihood. Right, so that's how you understand this is the proper kingdom. Right, because so these are all the elements that you're looking for. See, dry, because otherwise, if it's always raining, how do you grow things? You know, how do you perform occupations and everything? Dry doesn't mean, you know, we're not talking here Dubai or something. You know, dry simply means it's not like the British gave up Burma, even though it was originally part of the, you know, the East India Company. But because most of these things were a problem, it was always raining, always flooding, so there was always disasters, and you know, it was very hard to manage. So they just gave it up because it wasn't, they couldn't run it. So in other words, this is what's ideal. You know, if you don't have a choice, then hey, you know, this is okay. Chiefly inhabited by Aryans means they'll be the major. In other words, those who practice the Vedic culture. So then you can establish the laws based in that way. Right? Because you're always going to have those who are not Aryans that live in the forests and that, because so much of your land will also have forests, there'll be all varieties of perfect person. But you should have a good amount so that you can properly manage it. You know, so that they won't, because they will take care of the others. Right? Your tribe will generally tribes take care of themselves, but not necessarily someone else. And even if the tribe gets big and splits into groups, they may only take care of their part of it, not the others, unless they can be the head of the whole thing. Right? But the Aryan will, you know, that's his duty, he'll take care of. Right? Pleasant, you know, so people will be comfortable, because if they're comfortable, then these finer natures will come out. They'll be able to, you know, give time to spiritual life. They'll be able to aspects of refining the culture, so there's some satisfaction, so they can move up and they won't just be mudas. Right? Yeah. Vassals are obedient, so you know they'll follow, they're not always trying to fight and everything with you. And the people find the livelihood easy, so then there'll be extra time, because if your livelihood is too difficult, where's the time for spiritual life? Right? Because it means if you're not alive, very hard to chant your rounds, right? You know. Like that. You don't find a lot of dead people, you know, chanting their rounds, right? So you don't have time for the family, so all the different things of what we were talking about before, of the proper, you know, focus on spiritual life and, you know, the family development, if the occupation is too difficult, these things don't go on so easily. Yes? Very cold. Well, I mean, once it goes below zero, it is very dry. So then here it might go into like that. Pleasant, I'm not sure about that. You might like that. Not subject to epidemic diseases, generally it's too cold, so they don't get those. Chiefly inhabited by Aryans, that's not going to happen. And easily find their livelihood, that also not. So the dry is not enough, sorry. It's like if every place else is taken, okay, then you know, keep going north. You know? But you know, in other words, others come and go. Right? You know what I'm saying? Is you're a Norseman, they went up north. But if they had an opportunity, they always would go south. right? And generally down to, you know, the tropics. You know, you always find them in the Mediterranean or the far Middle East and stuff like that. Not in the Far East, but. They're saying, so they tend to head south, but like your Inuits, they prefer to be up there. You know, so that they're tribals. So that they prefer to be in that environment. That is their environment. But the others, is just that's the only place where they'll leave you alone. You know? Let him build there a town, making for his safety a fortress, protected by a desert, or a fortress built of stone and earth, or one protected by water or trees, or one formed by an encampment of armed men or a hill fort. Right, so these are different ways that you can set it up like that. Because some of them do have mud forts, or, you know, we see when Nanda Baba, when they were moving from Gokul to Nandagaon, when they stopped in, was it Chattigarh? Then they had one of these, a fort formed by an encampment of armed men. Right, so they had, you know, five rings like that to protect. Let him make every effort to secure a hill fort. Right, so all these are mentioned. Right, but the hill fort's the best. For amongst all those fortresses mentioned, a hill fort is distinguished by many superior qualities. The first three of those various kind of fortresses are inhabited by wild beasts, animals living in holes, and aquatic animals. Right, so desert built of stone and earth, and one protected by water and trees. So there's all kinds of living entities there. And they make holes and things, and they come out in your living room when you don't want them to. So therefore the horse is better. And the last three by monkeys, men, and gods. Right? So the hill fort is gods, the encampment of armed men is full of men, right? And trees is full of monkeys, right? So therefore that means enemies do not hurt these beings when they are sheltered by their fortresses. Even so, foes cannot injure a king who has taken refuge in his fort. One bowman placed on a rampart is a match in battle for 100 foes. Right? Means up on the fort and the rampart, you know, those places where you have that little gap that you can, so he can fight with 100 people on the ground. One 100 for 10,000. Hence it is prescribed in the Shastras that a king will possess a fort. Let that fort be well supplied with weapons, money, grain, and beasts of burden, with Brahmins, with artisans, with engines, with fodder, and with water. Let him cause to be built for himself in the center of it a spacious palace, well protected, habitable in every season, resplendent with whitewash, supplied with water and trees. Right. So in other words, nice and bright, you know, open, airy, it's good for all seasons. So he should build it. There's some places he can be when it's warm, places when it's cold, places that are, well protected. So all these different things he must consider. Okay, so that's the fort.
Most of the forts you think of in India are all in Rajasthan. Are there many others in the south or in the east?
Yeah, here and there. But you notice the ones in Rajasthan, what are they on? Hills, right? Yeah. So that's your idea. Because it means the hill is stone, so you're built on stone. So therefore your fort will be very strong. No one can dig under the wall and it'll fall down. Right? Plus, if it's stone, they can't easily dig under it. They have to come up like that. You don't have all the animals. So there's advantages.
There is one fort in Hyderabad called Golconda. It has 7 kilometers of wall. It's on a hill.
Okay.
Each kilometer has one wing.
Okay.
And they could only be defeated because they bribed the tower.
Yeah. Yeah, because otherwise some of these Jaipur was never defeated. And there's a fort, because to get into the fort you had to go through the gates, but they had extended things out. So you went through the one gate, and then you'd be in a courtyard before the actual main gate, and then you'd have army on four sides, so there's not much chance you're going to get anywhere. Yes?
What are the engines mentioned?
Engines, that would mean your war machines. or whatever it is that does work. You know, things that pump water or things like that. Engines just means a machine. But engine generally means he refers to something big. Okay, so supplied with water and trees. So it should have all facilities within it. So that's marriage. Inhabiting that, okay, so we see what he's doing. First, he's establishing himself that he's trained. Then he's respecting the Brahmins, establishing his ministers, establishing his prime minister, establishing his ambassador. Then the fort, then marriage. Right? So it means this is the priority. Because it means if you have your ministers, even if you have nothing else, you can establish a kingdom. If you have a fort and you don't have any ministers, then what are you going to do? Right? Okay. Right? Okay, so, you know, like in, what do you call it? Troy. They had a fort. Then he got married.
Right.
Yeah, it didn't turn out so well because I mean there's more variables in the thing, but the point was is still they had to wait to sit there for 10 years, you know, so it wasn't as easy as it was for him to catch the girl, right? Because they didn't seem to have it well arranged. They got married that didn't have a fort, so he had the fort and then he got marriage. Inhabiting that means his fort. Let him wed a consort of equal caste, Varna, who possesses auspicious marks on her body, and is born in a great family, who is charming and possesses beauty and excellent qualities. Right? So equal nature. Right? So he shouldn't marry someone who's not, he's a Kshatriya, he should marry a Kshatriya. Right? Because then the nature will be the same. You know? I mean, it's like this. You know, there's this, like, you have stories like this. The king goes out to battle. You know, his city is attacked. His fort is attacked. So then the king goes out to battle, but the other side is so powerful that he himself runs back to the palace. So then the guard of the inner chambers announces that the king has returned. And the queen says, "No, must be a fraud. Can't be the king." Right, because he's just come on his own, just privately. And the guard is insisting, "No, it's the king." He says, "No, if it was the king, he'd either come back victorious, you know, means the whole procession, or he'd come back dead." But he says, "My husband wouldn't come just run away from the battle and come here to see me." Somebody says, so that's why, you know, Kshatriyas marry Kshatriyas. It's just the nature. Okay. Who possesses auspicious marks, that means there's good qualities. Because as a queen, then she has to be supported. She has to bring out the good qualities of the husband. You know, born in a great family, so they've, you know, as we see with the others, they've proven themselves. They, you know, that they have standards. They do different things, just like when Damayanti was after she became separated from Nala, right? He got cursed by Kaliraj for not washing his feet after he ate. He entered through his heel. That's why you have to wash your feet, including the heel after eating. So she ended up in some kingdom, but because she knows the shastras and everything, she knows how a city is built and how the palace is built. So she just walked straight to the palace, went to the from the outside to where the queen's quarters and where the queen mother would be. Right? And then somehow or another made herself known. And so then, because she had all these qualities, you know, it means charming, possesses beauty, excellent qualities, they could appreciate she wasn't ordinary. The princess didn't understand so much, but the queen mother did. So then she called her in, and then she, you know, asked her this and that, and she wouldn't say much. She wouldn't say what she's just saying, she's wandering and all that. And, but she's, you know, looking for something to do. So then she said, okay, so, you know, okay, these are your services. She made her that she would train the princess, because the princess is always supposed to be with someone who knows all the etiquettes, all the behavior, you know, how to dress, how to talk, how to walk, how to do everything. So they're always with them, and they train them in everything. And then see that they're, you know, it'd be like, you know, you're, yeah, you know, a valet, like kind of thing. So then she said, any conditions? And she gave three conditions. You know, I won't eat anyone's remnants. Forget what the other thing she says. She said three things. Simple things like that. She won't eat anyone else's remnants. So, and then having said that, so then the Queen Mother said, oh, you're from this dynasty. So then that must mean that you are, down my head. So she could tell by the characteristics, right? Because the families, they have, you know, tradition. And so she's not going to do something that breaks her tradition. So it's simple things, things that other people would know about. But, you know, amongst the noble families, they all know. They know how, because otherwise, how do you go to the other kingdom if you don't know? Like when Bhishma, was it Bhishma? Yeah, when Bhishma went to arrange the wedding of Madri to Pandu. Yeah, Shalya was the brother. So then he came to him and they greeted and all this, and then he says, we want to, you know, make this arrangement. So he says, you know, in our tradition, we do like this, you have to give charity. Like that, as respect. So it would be an asura marriage, it's just the way their tradition was. And Bhishma said, yes, I know, I already brought everything. Otherwise, oh no, and then has to go back. No, he already knew. You know, and he knew what their standard was, how much, everything. So everybody was very satisfied. She already knows ahead of time. Does that make sense? So that's why the importance of the family tradition. Who is charming, possesses beauty and excellent qualities. So then charming, so everybody will be happy, deal nicely, you know, because you have to do a lot of hosting, like that. Possesses beauty, so then be attractive, you know, people will like, everybody will like working under her. Right? And excellent qualities, means all the qualities are there. So therefore, in working under her, or having to work with her, the qualities are good, so everybody's very satisfied. Right? So it's not just for beauty, or she's a celebrity, or, you know, these kind of things. That's not the consideration. They have to have the qualities to do it. But it doesn't say wealthy or powerful, right? It's saying that they're from a good family. They're just like, what do you call it? Born in a great family. Not even good, great. Just like one king, I don't know the names. Then he wanted to get his daughter married. She was extremely qualified. So he had his... I think the prime minister and, you know, general army, they went around to all the kingdoms. And she just went from kingdom to kingdom. Instead of having them all come there, it's a swine bar, he just sent her, she went around to all the kingdoms. And then to see the families, how they're living, see the princes, like that. So when she got back, then the father asked, you know, so did she find someone? And so then she said yes. So when they first left, you know, before they even got to the other kingdoms, while going through the forest to get there, she saw the person she wanted to marry. So then, but the king was a little worried because they didn't know anything about them. And he would have sent the prime minister, you know, that kind of retinue. And so they went to find them. And so when they found them, when they found them, then the father was very happy because he was the most, he was actually, they were a noble family, but there the prince, his father was the king, and the king's brother, you know, did some trick and got him thrown out, and then they went to the forest, like that. So they were like the most noble, and he was the most qualified. Like that. So like that, then. Does that make sense? So it's a great family. It's not that well placed. It's how great the character is. Because with character, you can do something. Just because you have facilities doesn't mean you can keep it. Yes.
Is it the story that you discovered that there's only 1 year left?
Yeah, I didn't want to get into it.
Okay.
That's another class. That's. Okay. The priest. Oh, that's her. Yeah, I think that's Savitri. The priest. Let him appoint a domestic priest, Purohit, and choose officiating priests, Ritviks. They shall perform his domestic rites and the sacrifices for which 3 fires are required. So he has his main priest, his head priest, and other officiating priests. So they'll all do all the whatever's needed to be done for the family, any of the samskars or any of the regular things that are done, your worship of the Pitris, you know, all these, whatever it is that is required to be done. The daily yajna is generally the king would sit at a daily yajna. Even Yudhishthira, when there's a battle, you wake up in the morning, all the musicians and everything like that, then go take his bath, do his morning yajna, give cows and charity to the Brahmins, then go to battle. And all that happened before 6 in the morning. Right? So when the sun would rise, well, they were fighting in mid-December. So it had been shorter. So probably, what, I think like 6:45? It gets light in Vrindavan in the winter. Like that. So this would have all happened before then. He would have already done yajnas, chanted his japa, done all these different things, given in charity. So, you know, it's something that they do. And notice here the interesting point, the Ritviks are below the Purohit. They're not the higher level, they're the lower level. Sacrifice. A king shall offer various sacrifices at which liberal fees are distributed, and in order to acquire merit, he shall give to Brahmins enjoyments and wealth. Right? So he'll do sacrifices, but he'll give quite nicely. Right? You know, others, maybe if a certain amount, a general standard fee, he'll give above that. You know, comfortable, very nice. He'll keep them very nice, so when they come, they're staying for some time to do the sacrifices. He'll take care of them nicely, feed them nicely, entertain them nicely. So in other words, he should do it, because by doing that, the results that you get back are so great. So generally the kings, more qualified Brahmins are coming, and as you get up there, then it gets 10,000 times the return, 100,000 times the return, or if it's someone like Narad Muni and Markandeya, then it's unlimited. Right? So like this, so you get back. It's not... You hear it of a few of them where they were so liberal at their sacrifice that the amount of charity they gave was 5 times the normal amount. Right? You know, each Brahmin would get 5 times what they'd normally get. Okay. So now he's married, so he has his priest, so he's doing his regular yajnas, he's doing sacrifices, giving in charity, then collection of revenue. Right? So what came first? Sacrifice and charity, then collection of revenue. Because from Dharma comes Artha. Not, okay, well, I'll make enough money when I have enough money, then I'll give in charity. No, you give in charity. That's where you get your money from. Right? Because that's the problem is people think, I will get the money, and when I have a lot of money, then I'll, you know, do something for the temple. Guaranteed, you can go around to all those temples where those devotees have said that, they still haven't really given anything of significance. Does that make sense? So this is the method. You first start with sacrifice and charity, then you deal with fundraising. Collection of revenue. Let him cause the annual revenue in his kingdom to be collected by trusty officials. So that's where we start getting into your bureaucrats and everything. Let him obey the sacred law in his transactions with the people, and behave like a father towards all men. For the various branches of business, let him appoint intelligent supervisors. They shall inspect all the acts of those men who transact his business. Okay, so we'll get to that. 261 through 28 from the Arthashastra gives some more detail. Okay, so here is that. So now, this is all in connection with revenue. So he's collected, so he has trustee officials who are doing the collection. He has supervisors to see that the officials are doing it properly. Right? And then he's going to have the ministers. And then he has his prime minister. So it's not that just he's given it and just lets it run. No, the officers are running, but you always have to watch the officers. That'll come up later, because they always can go corrupt. It's always a weakness. Right? Bureaucracy means corruption. So you always have to be on top of it to constantly see the bureaucracy doesn't go corrupt. If you find it's corrupt, you have to immediately correct it. It's not allowed to just run. It's just, oh, it's a necessary evil. No, it's not necessary at all. That's why he makes these next points. Let him obey the sacred law in his transaction of the people. In other words, how he deals with the people, and therefore in this way, takes taxes. Now, if he behaves like a father towards them, they don't mind giving their taxes. Right? Because he protects them. He deals nicely with them. So they're happy to give tax. Right? People don't like giving tax because they don't feel the government actually protects them. They just take their money. But if you take the money and you get back benefit by protection and facility, then no one minds. Okay. Does that make sense? So again, that's why the character is there. And he follows. He knows the law. He follows the law. So he follows the law because he knows the law. And as I said before, more important than that was Vedanta. Right? So he knows Vedanta, and so that will keep him on the path properly of following the Dharma. And so therefore, he'll be able to apply it very nicely in the transactions with people. Does this make sense? Okay. Honoring the Brahmins. Let him honor those Brahmins who have returned from the teacher's house after studying the Veda. For that money which is given to Brahmins is declared to be an imperishable treasure for the kings. Imperishable means it's so great. So it means they're qualified, they've honored. So now this is not those Brahmins that he's always respecting, the senior Brahmins. Now this is junior Brahmins, returned from the teacher's house. So this means they've just graduated, just gotten married, or younger, like that. Neither thieves nor foes can take it. Means what you've given to Brahmins, no one can take. Your treasury, someone can take. But what you've given in charity to the Brahmins, no one can take that. Neither thieves nor foes can take it, nor can it be lost. Hence, an imperishable store must be deposited by kings with Brahmins. Right? Because the greater his piety, the more nicely materially things run. Because you have to remember, you are dealing with a material skill here. Like that. So therefore you require piety. So the more pious they are, the better it runs. The offering made through the mouth of a Brahmin, which is neither spilt nor falls on the ground, nor ever perishes, is far more excellent than Agnihotras. Right? So even feeding the Brahmins is better than your daily yajna. A gift to one who is not a Brahmin yields the ordinary reward. Right? So it means you've given and then it gets back, whatever is the standard. So basically it's equal. To one who calls himself a Brahmin, a double reward. He just calls himself a Brahmin. Right? Even though he's not necessarily. But just that you've consideration of that, you get double. Right? Does that make sense? You know, so if it stipulates that there's a certain return, then you'll get double, or whatever it is. A gift to a well-read Brahmin, 100,000 reward. A gift to one who knows the Veda and the Angas, Veda Paranga, a reward without end. Right? So you can see it goes up very quickly. Right, so the Veda and the Angas means they can apply it. They know how to apply it. For according to the particular qualities of the recipient, and according to the faith of the gift giver, a small or great reward will be obtained for a gift in the next world. So this is also there, because here he says, according to the faith of the giver. If he has that faith in Brahmins, he'll get the maximum result. If he doesn't have faith, he's just doing it because he's supposed to, he'll get something back, but it'll be less. Right? But it'll be greater than ordinary charity. Does that make sense? Because otherwise, if you don't have faith, it drops it down into charity in the mode of ignorance. So it doesn't have that good of a result. So you must have faith. That's why it opens with Brahmins. That's where it starts. Right? He has to appreciate Brahmins. Honor in battle. A king who, while he protects his people, is defied by foes, be they equal in strength, or stronger, or weaker, must not shrink from battle, remembering the duty of kings. Okay. So, you know, in other words, he has to establish, just because it's going to be trouble, you know, he has to fight. Not to turn back in battle, to protect the people and to honor the Brahmins is the best means for a king to secure happiness. These three. So in other words, he doesn't turn his, you know, yeah. Whatever it is, he does it with full focus. Right? So there's a problem, he deals with it head on. Like that. That's why we see that with Karna never appreciated Duryodhana's all sort of political things. You know, because his thing is we're Kshatriyas. We just deal with it directly.
Accepting the gamble, was it based on not to turn back?
Means it's there. No, that was because Dhritarashtra invited him. Duryodhana didn't invite him. If Duryodhana had invited him, he wouldn't have gone. There's no obligation. Why should you go through a gambling match with someone who's dishonest? You're not obliged. So when it says that you have to accept when challenged, it must be a proper challenge by a proper person. You know, it's not just anybody. It has to be a proper person. Right? So Dhritarashtra, who was like their father, he invited them. And Dhritarashtra was heading the assembly, not Duryodhana. That's why everything kept going as it was, because otherwise, as soon as they found out that Duryodhana wasn't going to gamble himself, but Shakuni was, who's a professional gambler, then that also breaks the rules. So there's no obligation by Yudhishthira. But because Dhritarashtra is sanctioning it, based on that, he's following authority. Does that make sense? So it's not, but at the same time, as you do have that element, too. But the point is even if he feels it's a lesser, or he's in a weaker position, he still doesn't turn his back. Unless there's another avenue. Right? You can surrender that, but surrender still, that's done directly. You don't run away and then they capture you. That wouldn't be good. You know? The point is if it's not going to work, don't run away. Then, you know, you surrender or you fight and then they'll capture you. You know, or they'll kill you. In any case, you know, that's better than running away. Kshatriyas have scars on the front of their body, not on the back. So to be, you know, very, very determined and forceful in his endeavors to protect the people and honor the Brahmins. These are the qualities you look for in a Kshatriya. Right? This is the point. So someone who, you know, he doesn't back down in the meetings, he doesn't make it all political, do this and that, doesn't mean the political elements aren't going on. We're not saying he doesn't, the diplomatic elements are going, but he has others do that. He deals very directly. Does that make sense? He protects the people, that's the reason he's doing things, and he honors the Brahmins. So someone who doesn't respect authority, right, he's all political himself, and it's only for monetary gain, you're not dealing with a Kshatriya. Not at all. They're very different in meeting Kshatriyas. Very different. Because like he said before, even a young Kshatriya, you don't mess around with. Because they're very, very powerful. They deal totally differently in meetings. Those kings who seeking to slay each other in battle fight with the utmost exertion and do not turn back, go to heaven. Right? So when they're fighting, they put in the most effort. Because the point is whatever you do, you put in full effort. Otherwise, what's the use? So if you put in your full effort, then you'll either win, or you're killed, you made a good effort. And the other guy will glorify you as a great fighter. Right? So in either way, so you'll be respected here and you'll go to heaven. Or you'll win here. But you respect others for their prowess. That's the thing. Kshatriyas respect others for their abilities. You have them. If you don't have them, they don't say anything. They're not going to comment on something if you don't have it. Right? You know, if it's need be, the time and place, they may be very pleasant about it. But they're not going to just say like that. Vaishya Shudras make it. Because you say whatever it is, the guy's pleased, you make the deal, you make the money, who cares? So the Vaishya, the point is you made profit. Who cares if, you know, everybody thinks you're a rat bag for doing it? You got the money. And they and their dignity have nothing. You know what I'm saying? So it's a different mentality. But the Brahmins and Kshatriyas know the dignity is more important. Like before it was said, the Brahmin, he says it's good if it's good. If it's not good, he doesn't say it's good. Like that. But he's not like the modern honest who just is blunt. When he fights with his foes in battle, let him not strike with weapons concealed in wood. Okay, so ninjas are out here. Nor with such our barb, poison, or the points of which are blazing with fire. Right, so therefore you lose out a lot of your patience. Popular weaponries. Right? Because the point is poison, you didn't necessarily defeat him in battle, but you got close enough to nick him with something. So if it hadn't been poisoned, you'd lose. So it's not a show of prowess. The idea of Kshatriyas is a show of prowess. It's not who wins. It's a show of prowess. And one will win. Let him not strike one who, in flight, has climbed on an eminence, nor a eunuch, nor one who joins the palms of his hands in supplication, nor one who flees with flying hair, nor one who sits down, nor one who says, I am thine. So in other words, if he's in some kind of a position where he's vulnerable, or he surrenders, then you let them go. Because the point is if he turns around and just runs off, you let him go. Or you catch him, but you don't kill him. Right? Yeah. Oh. Nor one who sleeps, nor one, so that's, you know, so that was the whole thing about going out at night, Ashwatthama and his crew, and killing them while they're sleeping. You know, that was just to doom this point, is that, you know, at least, you know, give me a weapon, let's fight here. You know, so that's. Nor one who has lost his coat of mail, because otherwise, you know, where's the fairness? So in other words, he loses his weapon, you don't fight. He loses his mail, he either puts it on, you take yours off. You make it equal. The idea of fighting is it should be equal. No one who is naked, no one who is disarmed. So in other words, if he's taking a bath or anything like that, sleeping, you're not going to... No one who is disarmed, no one who looks on without taking part in the fight. Right? In other words, you don't kill mushrooms. No one who is fighting with another foe. He's fighting with someone else, you don't fight with him. Right? Kshatriyas don't like that. Others might, but Kshatriyas don't. Who are fighting and then someone else comes out behind them and like Kshatriyas don't appreciate that. It's just not done. Right? In other words, there has to be some dignity on that level. The foot soldiers do that to each other, it doesn't matter. You know, there you just get in and start, you know. If it's standing, you try to make sure that it's not. That's the rule, right? Nor one whose weapons are broken, nor one afflicted with sorrow, nor one who has been grievously wounded, nor one who is in fear, nor one who has turned to flight, But in all these cases, let him remember the duty of honorable warriors. But the Kshatriya who is slain in battle, while he turns back in fear, takes upon himself all the sins of his master, whatever it may be. Because that's not his duty. He's supposed to fight. Because if he fights, he'll go to heaven. Even the foot soldiers, they're fighting there, they'll go to heavenly planets. But if he doesn't, he turns his back, you know, and runs, then if he's killed, he'll take on all the sin of his, you know, or even if he's not killed, he just takes on the sin of whoever he's working under. And whatever merit a man who is slain in flight may have gained for the next world, all that his master takes. Right? So in other words, he turns his back and he runs, he takes on the sin of the master. If he's killed, whatever piety he has goes to the master. So in other words, there's no benefit in, you know, like this. Chariots and horses, elephants, parasols, money, grain, cattle, women, all sorts of marketable goods and metals, other than gold or silver, belong to him who takes them singly, conquering the possessor. Okay, so gold and silver, because of their greatness of value, then those will be those will be shared. Okay? But otherwise, you know, these kind of things, you fight for it, you take it. Women refers to maid servants, right? Because they go along with the family, so they go in a group. This doesn't mean that you go in and kill the guy and then you get his wife. No, it means if they had servants, you can get the servants. The wife still belongs to the husband. Right? A text of the Veda declares that the soldiers present a choice portion of the booty to the king, what has not been taken singly. Oh, okay, to the king, okay. So something of choice. They've collected, in other words, they themselves have fought. What they've conquered themselves, they can take. Right? But they have to give some choice thing to the king, something nice. Right? What has not been taken singly, means what they did as a group, must be distributed by the king amongst all the soldiers. Right? So the group takes it, even if someone's fighting in another place, they captured, then whatever the booty there is given. Thus has been declared the blameless primeval law for warriors. From this law a Kshatriya must not depart when he strikes his foes in battle. Yes. Gaining, preserving, augmenting, and bestowing wealth. This may be those four that they were talking about there. Unless it was diplomacy. Let him strive to gain what he has not yet gained. What he has gained, let him carefully preserve. Let him augment what he preserves. And what he has augmented, let him bestow on worthy men. Right? You have to gain something. What you've gained, protect it. You don't waste it. What you've protected, you expand it. You know, in other words, invest it. Make it do more. And what you've gotten from that, give that in charity to the Brahmins. Does that make sense? So that's so. You start with your capital, then that's how you develop it. Right? But we see before, he's already started by piety, then he's established himself. Now with that, he continues growing that. Let him know that these are the four means of securing the aims of human existence. Let him, without ever tiring, properly employ them. So this means everybody should do like this. Right? This is how it's done. You gain what is necessary within your duties, protect it, expand it, give in charity. So it says here, let the four means securing the aims of human existence. So dharma, artha, kama, and moksha you can get from this. Somehow or another, get some money, you know, but how it came, you have no idea. You know, spend it as, you know, quickly as possible, and you know, charity. Hey, charity begins at home. What he has not yet gained, let him seek to gain by his army. What he has gained, let him protect by careful attention. What he has protected, let him augment by various modes of increasing it. The way he has augmented, let him liberally bestow on worthy men. Right? So in other words, he's not losing his capital. So it means it's economically worse. Because now, what's happened at this point? He's already established his kingdom. He has the army. He has everything. Right? But he started by education, respect of the authority of the senior Brahmins, and sacrifice. Right? That way he establishes kingdom. Now he's established it, then what facilities he has is capital. He's expanding. And from the expansion of that well-protected capital, that he's giving in charity. Because then it will grow more. His capital will become greater.
Yes.
This principle to give in charity is mainly
in the
principle to give charity.
No, everybody gives in charity. Yeah, Vaishya also. He makes money, he has to give in charity. You don't have to tell him to do these things, because that's all he thinks about. Right? You know, in other words, making profit, protecting that, expanding it, but he may not think about giving in charity. So therefore, you have to push the point of charity. But for the Kshatriya, that he must gain, expand, protect and expand it, that you would have to point out, because he may not think about that as much. You understand? It's just part of his duty. Well, the Vaishya always think of that. He won't think of the charity. Let him be ever ready to strike, his prowess constantly displayed, and his secrets constantly concealed. And let him constantly explore the weaknesses of his foe. Right, because otherwise, how do you gain? How do you protect? How do you expand? How do you get in unless you're doing these things? If you're not ever ready to strike, then your foes will see your weakness and they'll come and take away all your facility. Right? Does that make sense? So he's always ready to strike. There's always something displayed so that people know that you're ready. But at the same time, as you don't, people don't know exactly what readiness means, you know. And he's always checking what are his foes' weaknesses. Okay. So that's why you have to conceal, because your foe is doing the same thing. He's checking your weaknesses. Of him who is always ready to strike, the whole world stands in awe. Let him therefore make all creatures subject to himself, even by the employment of force. In other words, one has to follow authority. So best is because of, you know, the proper exchanges and dealings. That's why they want to follow. But there are those people who, they don't care that you're a nice guy. You know, they have their own agenda. So even by force, he must bring them in line. In other words, there's no question that something's not running properly. Does that make sense? Yeah. So in other words, force is only necessary when someone doesn't comply. But you're always ready to show force. Does that make sense? You don't show it unless it's necessary, but you're always ready to show it. Right? There's those who, they never show it, but they're not ready to show it. Or they always show it, but they're always using it. This is, you're always ready to show it, but you're not applying it unless it's necessary. That's unique in management. Otherwise, they want to control everything, or they're so liberal they let everyone but do whatever they like. Neither of these work. One looks more organized, but it will fall apart. And the other one seems very nice, but it doesn't work. Gain. Okay, now we'll get into these four. Okay, so does that make sense? So if, like that, so following the Vedic principle, you show what's the essential points, the essence of it, why, and now you give the explanation, the expansion of it. That's just like in logic. You have the thesis, then you have the explanation, the expansion on it, then you have the full explanation, right, like that. And then there'll always be a conclusion. You'll see he'll constantly come back to the conclusion of protecting the people. Right? Serving the Brahmins, protecting the people. Right? Like that. And this one about, you know, and being enthusiastic in battle. gained by conquest. Let him ever act without guile, and on no account treacherously, carefully guarding himself. Because if you're treacherous, then you'll be taken over by treachery. Because how are you going to get something done? Through treachery means people aren't behaving properly. So if you do that, then that's going to be a problem. So in other words, you don't use treachery. But it's not that, like, there. If, you know, you're standing there and the guard says, hey, give me something, I'll open the door, you give him something. You know what I'm saying? But you don't try to break down the system, because the point is if you break down the kingdom through treachery, then now you're in charge of the kingdom. Now you have a treacherous kingdom. And the people in it have learned how to overcome the king. So now you're the king, they'll overcome you. Does that make sense? Which? Treachery means, you know, it means through like, huh?
Betrayal.
Yeah. You know what I'm saying? You say you're going to do one thing, then you don't. Point is you have your honor, then the point is you're respected by everybody. The worst foe, because he'll mention here, the worst enemy is one who's not treacherous, who's honorable, you know, dignified and educated. They're the worst enemy, because they have the piety to win. The guy who's always treacherous and this and that, he's a big trouble, but he'll always lose. There's just time, and then he'll always lose. Here, as I mentioned before, branch and root. He'll prosper for some time, and then he'll just disappear. Carefully guard. Okay, let him ever act without guile and on no account treacherously. Carefully guarding himself, let him always fathom the treachery which his foes employ. Right. So the foes may be using it, but you don't use it. His enemy must not know his weakness. Right. This is modern day. You say you're weak, but then they'll always use it against you. Because the point is you're saying it's honest to be open. But is the other person honest? You know, being honest to someone who's dishonest isn't honest. Because the point is being honest is supposed to improve things, not make it worse. Right? So you can be honest with those who are honest. Does that make sense? As the tortoise hides its limbs, even so let him secure the members of his government against treachery. Let him protect his own weak points. Right, so now it's also his own members of his government. They should also not be. Right, so if you find someone within the government is devious, they have to be removed. Because the point is then the whole government will fall. If it falls, the people aren't protected. So like means you can't see the limbs of a tortoise. So like that, he hides everything, but at the same time, that means how he's also dealing with treachery within his kingdom. People don't even know you're dealing with it. Okay. Let him plan his undertakings patiently, meditating like a heron. The heron just stands there, doesn't move. You don't know what it's doing. Like a lion, let him put forth his strength. Like a wolf, let him snatch his prey. Like a hare, let him double in retreat. Right. So no one knows what he's thinking until he acts. Is they're just there and then suddenly they strike the heron. It's not like there and then, oh hey, now I know what to do. It's that this whole time they're just standing, you don't know what they're doing. And then bang. It's like that. Like a lion. You know, a lion has so much strength. You know, and then the wolf, they just very cleverly catch whatever it is that they're looking for. Right? And then if he has to retreat, then let him be very quick at it. Okay, so this is gained by conquest. Then, gained by the fourfold politic. When he is thus engaged in conquest, let him subdue all the opponents whom he may find by the four expedients, conciliation and the rest. Okay, so the conciliation and the rest, that comes as part of, that is, half one of the points of gain. So it's talking about the four, then it means this: gain, preservation, augmentation, and charity. And then the other four, those are within gain. So one is by conquest, and the other is by the fourfold policy. Right? Sama, conciliation. Dana, gifts of wealth, facilities or position. Beta, ultimatums, creating dissension and splitting of alliances. And Dunda, force. They cannot be stopped by the first three expedients. Then let him, overcoming them by force alone, gradually bring them to subjugation. So then it brings it to the other one, gained by conquest. Among the four expedients, conciliation and the rest, the learned always recommend conciliation and the employment of force for the prosperity of kingdoms. By conciliation, one's good qualities are developed. By force, one develops focus and gains respect from others. The other is that by conciliation, because you don't know how a conflict will come out. Right? So that's always best. If you can work it out by speaking, that's always better. But if not, then force is the next most clear. Because you've given someone a position or given ultimatums, you don't know what will happen. But they're used. So therefore, the first and the fourth are. So in other words, you could say that these two means of gain, gain by conciliation and gain by conquest. All right? But the other two are part of, you know, the fourfold policy. Yeah, that's conciliation. That's always better. It's always better, because why have a fight? Why lose so much, you know, men and money and facilities? When if you can work it out peacefully, that's always better. So it's not that the Kshatriyas just love to fight. They're ready to fight if you need to, but it's not that they love a fight. The guys who love a fight, they work down at the nightclub, standing outside the door. That's where they are. But Kshatriyas means they don't like to fight, because they know a powerful person could lose, or a weak person could win. So it's not sure. So you only use fighting as a last resort. But they're willing to fight. As I said, he's always ready. If it need be, he's right there ready to strike. But it's not his first choice. But it doesn't mean he's weak. It just means he's smart.
But it seems that the Kshatriya in this situation is very focused.
Yes, it's very focused. So you're either focused on trying to work it out peacefully or on fighting. It means any of them that he's using these. Dana, he gives wealth, he gives appropriate for the person, the position in this, you know, so he gets down what he wants. You know, like that, like they got in the gate because of Dana. Right? Dunda, they say that, you know, if you do this, then, you know, otherwise this will happen. Or he's through his own people, he's putting up a way to split alliances. Like when the king, they're having a problem because 12 tribes get together and they're against the one king. There's a big problem there. So then, you know, you have these, you know, the one who's the main guy, and then you have some others who are, you know, smaller. But you know that they're not the closest, but they're other. Like this, then you send, you know, you give somebody or send in your own man, you know, and you give him a big chest of valuables or jewels or gold like that with a note being sent from one of these kings to the other or something like that. That, you know, here's the payment for that, for, you know, doing this intrigue against this main guy and all that. And we tribes are behind you on fighting against him, and, you know, why he should be in charge and things like that. Then he gets upset and then, you know, breaks off alliances or kills these others. So that was beta. You know, or saying, you do this or we're going to, you know, there's war or like that. Either of these, or best both, because the point is if you do Dunda and the person has strong allies, then they'll become stronger. But if you weaken the alliance, then when Dunda's there, you're on your own. Does that make sense?
Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
Srila Prabhupada ki.
Jaya.
Samaveta Bhaktivedanta ki.
Jaya.
Jainatai Gaur.